between Earth, the mission control in Houston, and what we now call Tranquility Base, that is the lunar landing craft on the surface of the moon. For those who may have lunar maps, the Tranquility Base, or Eagle, is now at 0.799 degrees north by 23.46 degrees east. It's about 4 miles west of the originally targeted area. This is the Voice of America, broadcasting from Washington. Now, from the Voice of America's newsroom, a summary of late world news.
Man is on the moon. The American astronauts Neil Armstrong and Edwin Aldrin set their landing craft Eagle gently down on the lunar surface at 20 hours, 18 minutes, Greenwich Mean Time. Command pilot Armstrong said, "Contact light on, engine off, the Eagle has landed." The moon landing team's first scheduled move is to inspect the landing craft to be sure it was not damaged in the descent and touchdown, and that it is ready for the return flight to the mothership, the Columbia, which continues in orbit around the moon, piloted by astronaut Michael Collins. Astronaut Aldrin, reporting on the appearance of the moon surface, said, "It looks like a collection of just about every variety of shapes, angularities, granularities, just about every variety of rocks you can find." The Soviet Union has announced that its spacecraft Luna 15 has moved into a new orbit, taking the ship to within 16 kilometers of the moon's surface. Earlier, the Jodrell Bank Observatory in Britain had noted the change in Luna's orbit. Spokesman at the observatory said the new path brought Luna somewhat closer to the orbit of Apollo 11. Egyptian and Israeli planes crossed the ceasefire line this afternoon to bombard each other's missile and gun positions and radar stations on the two sides of the Suez Canal. Egypt says 17 Israeli planes have been downed in aerial dogfights and by ground fire along various sectors of the waterway. Israel reports 5 Egyptian planes shot down and the loss of 2 of its own. Israel says the heavy ground fighting in the Suez Canal area tapered off late today. There is no word from the Egyptian side. Today's major Suez Canal fighting followed a pre-dawn Israeli landing raid on the Egyptian fortified island of Qadra in the northern Gulf of Suez. Both sides claimed they inflicted heavy casualties on the other. Israel said 6 of its men were killed in the hand-to-hand engagements. Egypt said it lost 6 men killed or wounded. General Earl Wheeler, chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, left Saigon Sunday after a 4-day assessment of the situation in South Vietnam. He told reporters he saw no political meaning in the current scaled-down level of enemy attacks. General Wheeler said enemy infiltration, although comparatively less than last year, is continuing, and he noted that communist combat activity has always occurred in cycles. General Wheeler declined to discuss future U.S. troop withdrawals, but said the South Vietnamese armed forces were making progress in increasing their combat capability. In the war, government troops reported capturing 15 tons of ammunition at communist supply points near the western sector of the demilitarized zone. Enemy gunners shelled the Bien Hoa Air Base north of Saigon, causing light damage and casualties, and sent 2 rockets into the capital. It was the 4th attack against Saigon this month. Rome dispatches say Italy's breakaway Unitarian Socialists today reiterated their refusal to join a new coalition government unless they receive guarantees there will be no cooperation with the communists. Last night, the Christian Democrats reportedly said they would not accept any solution except a new coalition in which both socialist parties take part. Millions of people all over the world will be following by radio and television Monday's moonwalk by astronauts Armstrong and Aldrin. The Voice of America estimates its radio audience as the greatest of all time, perhaps 500 million people listening to reports in 36 languages. At the start, astronaut Armstrong will activate the camera to show him at the top of the landing ship ladder. He will bring the camera down with him to the moon's surface, set it up on a tripod, and start it going while the astronauts go about their work. That's the news from the Voice of America newsroom. This is Gene Peterson reporting.
And this is the Voice of America continuing its worldwide coverage of the flight of Apollo 11. American astronauts Neil Armstrong and Edwin Aldrin have landed on the moon. Today, July 20th, 1969, at 20 hours 18 Greenwich Mean Time, about 1 hour and 18 minutes ago. Let's get an updated report now as we go to the Manned Spacecraft Center and correspondent Rhett Turner.
Here at the Manned Spacecraft Center, the mission control line has been turned off temporarily. We are expecting an announcement, a statement by Dr. Thomas Paine, the chief of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. And that should come within the next few minutes. And we will stand by for that. At the moment, we have no contact with the spacecraft or air-to-ground conversation. Back to you, Bill McCrory.
We're having some problem with our circuits to correspondent Rhett Turner in Houston. We will stand by for that announcement and get it directly from Apollo Mission Control. Hopefully that line trouble to Houston will clear up. We do have the good fortune of having good communications, though, with the moon. With Tranquility Base, the Eagle lunar landing craft sitting on the moon at about a 4.5 degree angle. Those coordinates, those map coordinates, once again, at 0.799 degrees north by 23.46 degrees east, about 4 miles west of the targeted area. To re-identify some of our colleagues who are covering this story, with me, Norman Guerin, at the Manned Spacecraft Center. You heard, of course, from correspondent Rhett Turner. Our NASA colleagues, Don Beatty, our expert on the lunar surface, and William Land, who has been with us since earlier on. Well, gentlemen, I wonder if we can look ahead just a bit into the next portions of this mission, what will be coming up next as far as events go on the lunar surface. Bill Land?
Well, the next major event, Bill, on lunar surface is the extravehicular activity when the crew will open the forward hatch of the lunar module and proceed down a ladder to the surface of the moon. And prior to that, however, they will continue some checkouts of the lunar module, which they're undergoing right now. They'll have a short period in which they'll eat some lunch. Then they'll have, according to the timeline, about 4 hours of rest, if they can get some rest with all the excitement going on. Another period of eating, and then 2 hours, roughly, of checkout for the extravehicular activity. The extravehicular activity itself will take approximately 2 hours and 40 minutes, and we have a carefully planned timeline there for things that will be accomplished for purposes of scientific experiments and lunar environment familiarity.
Well, with the excitement that we feel here on the Earth, I suppose that is doubled as far as astronauts Armstrong and Aldrin are concerned. Do you think they'll do much sleeping if they do go into this sleep period?
Well, it's really hard to say, Bill. I think we'll just have to wait and see and see what their opinion is at the time that's supposed to occur. However, we did note that Neil Armstrong's pulse rate went to 156 upon landing, and to me that doesn't seem very high. I think there are many of us around here who are a lot more excited, so it's possible that he would get a lot of rest, and this is up to him.
I think we gave you credit for the quote of saying that we are moving into a new world now, a new scientific world. I wonder if you would want to expand on that, Bill Land. Some of the things that the information that we will be coming upon just in the next few hours.
I don't feel very qualified as a scientist. My forte is as an engineer. However, I can see many areas of exploration that have just opened up now to determine the origins of the universe and many other things that I think possibly Don Beattie is more familiar with in the way of investigations. I'll pass that one on to him.
Don?
Well, I think, Bill, that from the very brief descriptions that we've heard so far from Neil and Buzz, that when they do get out on the surface, that there are a number of very interesting things awaiting them. They've already described various kinds of rocks. Buzz already said that there was some color that he could see. We know that dust was raised up when they came in for the landing, so there will be some changes in the immediate vicinity of the landing site, and all these things I'm sure they'll be able to report on and make some very interesting observations.
Well, Don, if you remember, there was some worry after watching the unmanned surveyor flights that there might, in kicking up this dust, that it's a sand-like dust, that it might stick to the windows and fog them up. Apparently this did not happen.
Well, the surveyor showed us that when they lighted off the engine to move the one surveyor, that we did get some material sticking to the lower surfaces of the spacecraft. However, we did have on the surveyors some mirrors, which we were able to look at with the television camera, and we noted that there was very, very little contamination of these mirrors, which were higher up from the surface. So where that always was a potential problem, I think it was a very negligible one, that we would have a lot of material sticking to the windows.
As we've reported a bit earlier on, the landing was at a little different spot. They had to burn the engines about 1 minute longer when they looked down and saw some pretty rough terrain, the rocks, and they said, I believe, a crater that was almost as big as a... Here is Apollo Mission Control.
Well, we understand there's been a brief delay in the statement from NASA Administrator Thomas Paine. We will catch up with the tape-recorded conversation that we've had with Eagle on the lunar surface at this time.
Rolling 5. Down 86. Plus 0, 538. Plus all zeros. And the last one was... 0012,
and what's the sign of that, please? Tranquility, Houston. The Delta VY is minus all zeros. The Delta VZ is plus 0012, over.
You're listening to more communications between
Roger,
Houston
plus 0012. Roger, good read back.
And Neil Armstrong at that point on the moon.
Bill, while you were talking, there was evidently an update on the position which would place the landing
Houston,
slightly outside the ellipse.
The disk is yours and update link to data. Roger, thank you, Tranquility.
Very clear communications with the lunar landing module, Tranquility Base, or Eagle when it's flying. Information being passed back and forth between Mission Control in Houston and the lunar module that has been sitting on the surface of the moon now 1 hour and 26 minutes.
Hello, Tranquility Base, Houston. On my mark, it will be 37 minutes till T3, over.
37 minutes until
okay.
Another go, no-go decision. Is that correct, gentlemen? Till T3?
Stand by.
Well, it's 37 minutes
on,
until the next opportunity for a liftoff from the lunar surface. However, prior to that time, they will get a go for continuing their stay.
You started to give us some new coordinates on...
This is Houston. It's your computer. We got the load in. You can start your P-57.
Roger, thank you.
More read-ins for the computer on the lunar landing craft. Don?
Yes, I'm not sure that I received these correctly, Bill, but what I heard was that the landing site now was plotted at 0.47 north and 23.27 east. So that would place it just a little bit outside of the planned ellipse, but not very much. I'm sure we'll get further updates of that position later on.
Do your photographic maps there show the terrain, or is it outside the area?
Well, we do have some maps here that show the terrain in some detail, and about all you can say is that there appear to be a lot of craters there, just as Armstrong and Aldrin described.
I wonder when they do egress, come out from the spacecraft for their walk on the moon, if they will be able to get as far as one of these craters, one of these large craters that they spoke of, or would that be outside their perimeter? Bill?
From what we heard, Bill, it sounds like they would be able to reach one of these craters, one of these rather large craters, and do a little bit of looking into it and photographing of that so we can bring back some detail.
Well, gentlemen, we are sitting here, I suppose, living through history with a spacecraft sitting on the moon, sitting there for at least an hour and a half, and we move along into the mission as if, I suppose, we were about to take a jetliner. It seems almost too matter-of-fact and too routine for an event like this, but I suppose we should look ahead for our listeners as to some of the events that will be coming up. Bill Land, you mentioned the fact that after this checkout, which runs roughly about 2 hours, we'll have a period of 35 minutes or so for eating. Let's go to Mission Control in Houston.
Thomas O. Paine, I have a short statement, then we'll be glad to accept questions. Dr. Paine.
Dr. Thomas O. Paine, head of the National Space
Immediately
Agency.
Immediately after the lunar touchdown, I called the White House for Mission Control and gave the following report to the President. Mr. President, it is my honor on behalf of the entire NASA team to report to you that the Eagle has landed on the Sea of Tranquility and our astronauts are safe and looking forward to starting the exploration of the moon. We then discussed the gripping excitement and wonder that had been present in the White House and in Mission Control during the final minutes of this historic touchdown. I emphasized to the President the fact that we still had many difficult steps ahead of us in the Apollo 11 mission, but that at the same time, a giant step had been made with our successful landing. President Nixon asked me to convey to all of the NASA team and its associated industrial and university associates his personal congratulations on the success of the initial lunar landing and gave us his good wishes for the continuing success of this mission. I think that it would be not right for me to give to you my own personal feelings about this historic moment. We have clearly entered a new era, and I think it means a different thing to each one of us. The voices that we hear coming back from these brave men on the surface of the moon are still hard to believe, and yet it's true. I think that this success is something that has raised the spirits of men around the world and has caused us to pause and ponder its meaning, which only history in the final analysis will reveal to us. It's significant, I think, that 2 days ago, the Soviet Union, at our request, passed to us valuable orbital parameters for the Luna 15 mission in an unprecedented cooperative movement that I think bodes well for the future of mankind's exploration of our sister planet. Be very happy to answer any questions that you may have. I would suggest that you hold those of a technical nature for the off-shift press conference, which will follow within a few moments, and the fellows are getting the data ready for you.
That statement from Dr. Thomas Paine, head of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Here's the first question.
Peter Reich of Chicago Today, sir. Number one, may I express my gratitude as an American for this fantastic success. Second, may I ask, what emotion did the astronauts display from what we heard here, and it was lost in the cheers, they were quite emotionless. Surely they must have expressed some emotion to you, sir.
I think that there was a great deal of emotion, both in mission control and just above the surface of the moon as the mission touched down. I suggest that you talk to Dr. Chuck Berry when he arrives. The medical indications were very clear that although the voices were under tight control, the emotion was running rather high, as it was in all of us.
Since Armstrong had to make a manual maneuver at the end, does this indicate to you that they couldn't have landed safely if it had been an unmanned vehicle?
I think it suggests that we've been extremely lucky with our unmanned landers. As we looked at the terrain that they originally headed down into, which we had thought was a safe place to land, certainly indicated that we might indeed have had considerable difficulty if it had been a completely programmed landing.
Dr. Paine, has there been a congratulatory note from Russia to the President or yourself?
We are receiving a number of messages right at the moment, and I simply can't answer yet which ones have come in.
Questions to Dr. Paine.
Have you, since Colonel Borman's communication with the Russians, received any further communication from them regarding Luna 15, and where was it at the touchdown?
No.
Nick? I thought I heard one of the astronauts mention something about a 1201 alarm. Did you hear that, or what was it? I'm not sure.
There were several software alarms, and I suggest you discuss that with the mission control staff when they come in within a few moments.
Questions to Dr. Thomas Paine, Chief of National
Space Agency. Colonel Borman said that the Russians had passed word to him indirectly of today's change in the orbit of Luna 15. How was that done?
I don't know. I haven't talked to Frank in the last 6 or 7 hours.
I think what he was referring to, it was another telegram. I think he received it while he was driving in an automobile. And at the time he mentioned this to Dan, rather, he considered that an unusual way to receive a telegram. That's at least the way he explained it to me. Carl Abraham.
Dr. Paine, are there plans to release a transcript of your conversation with the President, and would you give us your impressions of his response to your news in an emotional sense?
I gave you a verbatim transcript of my original remarks, and I'll furnish you the entire thing if we have it taped. I'm not sure that we did. His mood as he talked to me, and my own mood, and you must remember that this was just a few moments after the report that the Eagle had landed in the Sea of Tranquility. Our mood was one of considerable tension relieved. He spoke with a great deal of excitement and I would say almost awe in his voice. We both very soberly discussed the fact that we still had a great deal of difficult operations ahead of us in the mission. But there was a great feeling of relief after those final seconds of the touchdown that the fellows were down safely on the surface.
Dr. Paine, do you think that the physical condition of the crew is a good indication that man can in fact live on extraterrestrial bodies?
This is strictly a personal opinion on my part, but it seems clear to me that what we have demonstrated is a very crude and preliminary form of travel between the Earth and other bodies. as we look at the things that we have on the drawing boards, as we look at the dreams of the engineers for the future, it seems very clear to me that there are two basic factors that have to be answered. The first is whether or not we can attain the kind of costs and the kind of reliability in space flight that we now have in air travel. And I'm quite convinced that we can. And the second question is if we can indeed travel in a practical way to the moon and eventually beyond, will men indeed wish to do so? And will they wish to found small first research stations and perhaps eventually permanent colonies? And it seems to me that the history of mankind is that they certainly will. So I would say, yes, I think we have entered a new era. I think that the significance of the trip that has just started today is indeed that mankind is going to establish places of abode outside of his home planet, the Earth.
Dr. Payne, BBC London, and our congratulations to you. Do you have any proposals in the United States that you may have discussed with the President or anyone else to name the present landing site of Armstrong and his crew? And if you have, what are the candidates for such a name?
We've had no such discussion. At the present time, as you know, we're calling it Tranquility Base in our communications, and if past is any prelude to the future, that's probably what it will wind up being called.
Dr. Payne, I wonder if you could characterize for us the extent, the scope of the mission which lies ahead, particularly the ascent and trip back to Earth.
Well, I think that you all have the press kit that details this in very good shape. I don't want to just repeat what's in there, but the thing that's the most encouraging is the fact that we have got a landing within just a few degrees of the vertical, and the things that we were somewhat concerned about as to whether or not we would get a landing such that it would facilitate the ascent and rendezvous, it now lies behind us. We're in an excellent position for the rest of the mission.
Was the fact that the selected landing point looked much more rugged than it was foreseen a surprise for you and for the team, or did it create a moment of worry?
Well, I would say that we were more disappointed than surprised. We knew, of course, that there was the possibility of considerable roughness down there. This is why in all of our training we've emphasized the astronauts flying the last few feet down and selecting the safe landing position.
Dr. Payne, has President Nixon indicated at what time he would be speaking to the astronauts on the lunar surface?
No, this hasn't been decided yet. We'll be looking at our timelines and finding a place in there that will be convenient.
Do you know whether the whether President Nixon was listening to the last moments of the touchdown?
Yes, he was. He was with Frank Borman at the time, and in our discussions, he emphasized the great tension of these last few seconds.
Dr. Payne, Benjamin Wong from Mexico, you said that we are entering a new era. How would you name this era?
I certainly don't think that it would be called the space age any more than Columbus's age would be called the ocean age. But we have many talented phrase coiners here in the audience, and I'll leave that to you people.
I'm Christine Lanigan of the Waltham News Tribune. Is it true that we here on Earth had better communication with Eagle than Collins did in the command module, and to what do you attribute this?
I'm not sure that we did. We did have excellent communications, but we also, several times when we had a temporary loss of our high gain antenna communication, switched over and passed the message through Columbia, and that was very successful too. This might be a question you could direct to the control room crew.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Payne, I am coming from Angola, Portuguese, West Africa, and I would like to know if it is true or not, if you are intending to put four men on the moon in next years.
Four men? What we are now planning four missions to the moon, including the present one in the Sea of Tranquility. Beyond that, we have sufficient rockets in our production line for 6 additional missions, and we are making plans. We have tentative plans for all 10 of these missions to the moon, including the present one.
Early in the descent, you indicated, you did have some difficulty in the high gain antenna. Could you characterize the feeling in mission control with everyone there?
Well, again, I suggest you direct this to them. I think the general feeling was, would you guys please roll over 10 degrees so we'd get a better lock?
Robert Hargreaves from...
Well, I wouldn't say we weren't anxious, but I don't think we were particularly anxious about that alone. We were very anxious.
Robert Hargreaves from ITN Television in London. Is there still a possibility, Dr. Payne, that EVA will start early? And if so, who will take this decision, Mission Control here in Houston or Mr. Armstrong himself?
This would be a joint decision if it's made. At the present time, I do not believe we've discussed this with the crew.
Louis DeRoche.
What do you consider, Dr. Payne, is the major significance of Apollo 11's highly successful landing on the moon on the international level, sir?
I think, Mr. DeRoche, that as I sat there listening to the communication checks coming in from Madrid, and as I considered the fact that the lunar television would be coming back through the Great Parks antenna in Australia, that the international teamwork that produced this effort was very much in my mind. And as I looked at the names on the lunar craters of the great scientists of the past that we were building on, it seemed to me that it was very clear that this was indeed an effort of all mankind, and that this certainly overshadowed any chauvinistic feeling that might have been present.
We'll have a change of shift briefing with the technicians in 28 minutes. Thank you very much. You just heard a short press conference, a statement from Dr. Thomas O. Payne, the head of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, and also questions posed to him by newsmen from all over the world who are here in Houston, Texas, covering this historic event, the landing on the moon of Apollo 11. The command module has now come into contact with the Earth again. It has come around the backside of the moon and now should be able to contact the Mission Control Center here in Houston. And during this press conference, the Mission Control Center has been recording all conversation that has transpired. We expect to hear that passed down to Earth at any moment. For the moment, let's go back to Washington.
This is the Voice of America's continuous coverage of the flight of Apollo 11. Eagle, now 1 hour and 45 minutes on the lunar surface. This program is originating in Washington.
The Voice of America has a limited supply of color photographs of the 3 Apollo 11 astronauts. If you would like one of these souvenir photos, write to The Voice of America, Washington, D.C., USA, Box 8108. Citizens of the United States are not eligible.
This is The Voice of America. We'll return to our live coverage of the mission of Apollo 11 following this report of late world news.
President Nixon is following the Apollo 11 mission from his White House office. Before the lunar landing, the president led the nation in a religious service for the success of the astronauts' mission. The president reminded his audience of more than 300 administration officials that this is an historic day, the day when man will first set foot on the moon. Also participating in the service was astronaut Frank Borman, who has been with the president throughout the mission. Colonel Borman read the same passage from the Bible which he read while in space last December as commander of Apollo 8. The president will talk to astronauts Armstrong and Aldrin when they leave their module to walk on the lunar surface. Sunday marked one of the heaviest days of fighting in the Middle East in recent weeks. Israel has reported that the ground fighting in the Suez Canal area tapered off late Sunday.
There's no word yet from the Egyptian side. In the air, for the first time since the Six-Day War of June 1967, both Cairo and Tel Aviv said their air forces had bombed military targets inside each other's territory. Egypt said it downed 17 Israeli jets. Israel admitted losing two planes and said five Egyptian planes were downed. The fighting began early Sunday with an Israeli attack on the Egyptian fortified island of Qadra in the northern Gulf of Suez. At dusk, the Egyptian Air Force hit back with a raid into the Israeli-occupied Sinai Peninsula. Yugoslavia and the United Arab Republic are reported to be in agreement that a ministerial meeting of non-aligned nations should be held later this year, about the time the United Nations General Assembly goes into its annual session in New York. This was revealed in an interview with the Yugoslav news agency by Yugoslavia's Deputy Foreign Minister Radivo Uvilic. He recently returned to Belgrade from talks in Cairo. The recent consultative meeting of non-aligned nations in the Yugoslav capital approved holding such a meeting, but did not set a date. The Soviet Union has announced that its spacecraft Luna 15 has moved into a new orbit, taking the ship to within 16 kilometers of the moon's surface. Earlier, the Jodrell Bank Observatory in Britain had noted the change in Luna's orbit. Spokesman at the observatory said the new path brought Luna somewhat closer to the orbit of Apollo 11. A spokesman for the observatory, Professor John Davies, said Luna could not remain in its present orbit indefinitely because of magnetic pockets around the moon. He said it would either have to land or move into a higher orbit. Pope Paul today hailed the extraordinary and astonishing Apollo 11 mission, but warned against the danger of idolizing the products of man's ingenuity. Speaking to pilgrims outside his summer residence, the Pope said the heart of man should become better and more religious as the power of his machines and weapons becomes greater and more dangerous. Colombia's President Carlos Lleras Restrepo Sunday night said the United Nations was no longer capable of maintaining world peace and should be reshaped. In a State of the Nation address to Congress, delayed for an hour to permit the legislators to view the U.S. astronauts' moon landing, President Lleras said the U.N. had clearly shown its inability to restore peace in troubled areas. In the light of what President Lleras called an arms race unparalleled in history, he said it was necessary to reform the world body in the hope of creating lawful rule on Earth. Rome dispatches say Italy's breakaway Unitarian Socialists Sunday reiterated their refusal to join a new coalition government unless they receive guarantees that there will be no cooperation with the communists. Saturday night, the Christian Democrats reportedly said they would not accept any solution except a new coalition in which both socialist parties take part. Senator Edward Kennedy is reported resting under a doctor's care at his family home in Hyannisport, Massachusetts. United Press International quotes a family doctor as saying that the senator suffered a slight concussion in the automobile accident, which early Saturday took the life of a woman passenger driving with him. Astronaut Michael Collins, orbiting 100 kilometers above the moon in the Apollo command module, took an elaborately casual attitude toward the feat of his two fellow astronauts in landing on the moon. Less than an hour after astronauts Neil Armstrong and Edwin Aldrin touched down on the lunar surface, astronaut Collins radioed ground control with a message, "Let me know when it's lunchtime, will you?" When the ground controller advised him to repeat the question, Collins replied, "Disregard." That's the news from the Voice of America newsroom. This is Jack Moyles reporting. One, two. This is the Voice of America's continuous coverage of the flight of Apollo 11. Astronauts Armstrong and Aldrin have been in their lunar lander on the moon for an hour and 53 minutes now, surveying a landscape of rills and hills, boulders, craters, and rocks. They describe the color as almost uniformly gray, from ashen to almost chalky white. They reported literally thousands of craters in view, from less than a third of a meter to more than 15 meters in size. In the words of Aldrin, it looks like a collection of just about every variety of shapes, angularities, granularities, just about every variety of rocks you can find. The astronauts also reported no difficulty adapting to the 1/6 gravity of the moon. They were reported in excellent condition, and the lunar landing spacecraft itself was said to be in good shape by officials at Mission Control. In Houston, Texas, the head of the space agency, Dr. Thomas Paine, said, "We have entered a new era. The voices we heard coming back from these brave men on the moon are hard to believe, and yet it's true." Dr. Paine also noted Soviet cooperation in providing data on the path of Luna 15. He said, "This sort of cooperation bodes well for mankind's future." And now to Houston and Correspondent Turner for a status report.
We're hearing a lot of information being passed back and forth between Mission Control and the Eagle in the Tranquility Base. Let's listen to a bit of this.
Columbia, this is Houston. We don't want you to transmit, Mike. We just want you in that position in case you want to talk to Tranquility. Break. Tranquility, Houston, say again, over.
Roger, I have a fairly good size difference between battery volt on 5 and 6. 6 is reading 33.5 and 5 is reading 36.5. Is that what you expect, over?
That's Aldrin.
Roger, stand by.
That's Buzz Aldrin asking for some battery information.
They are both coming up in voltage, no problem. We're still go, over.
Mike Collins. Roger, says Buzz Aldrin. Mike Collins is in a standby position in Columbia, the command module, also around on this side of the moon again, transmitting back to Earth. These are tape recordings of...
Hello, Tranquility Base. Houston, could you please give us a readout now of all of your descent tank pressures? Over.
This is a recording which was transmitted
okay,
to Earth.
Houston, and descent one. Fuel and oxidizer.
This was transmitted to Earth during the press conference we heard by Dr. Thomas Paine just a few minutes ago. We're catching up on all of the communication which has transpired.
Roger, Tranquility. Thank you much, Al.
The status of the flight at this point is that the lunar module, Eagle, is on the surface of the moon. They're calling it Tranquility Base. Here's Aldrin again.
Power down and terminate the simulated countdown.
Roger, stand by.
Aldrin says he's ready
to
power down.
Tranquility Base, Houston, you can start your power down now. Over.
And
Roger, it's in progress.
He's ready to end the simulated
Tranquility
countdown.
Base, the white team is going off now, letting the maroon team take over. We appreciate the great show. It was a beautiful job, you guys.
Roger, couldn't have had better treatment from all of you back there.
That's Aldrin saying, "I couldn't have had better treatment from all you back there."
Go, Tranquility, over.
Roger, our recommendation at this point is... planning an EVA with your concurrence starting at about 8 o'clock this evening, Houston time. That is about 3 hours from now.
Stand by.
There's the request for an early EVA, for an early exit to the surface.
Tranquility Base, Houston, we thought about it. We will support it. We're go at that time. Over.
That means that the step out onto the surface
Roger.
Of the moon will come earlier than planned.
You guys are getting prime time TV there.
I hope that little TV set works, but we'll see.
Roger.
Instead of...
Hello, Tranquility Base, Houston. Will your 8 o'clock Houston time reference to opening the hatch or starting the prep for EVA at that time, over? At the hatch opening. That's what we thought. Thank you much. That might be a little later than that, but in other words, start the prep in about an hour or so.
Yes, Columbia, copy 949.
Stand by, Columbia. Tranquility Base, Houston, that's fine. We're ready to support you anytime, Neil, over.
Right.
Break. Columbia, we see the 949. Stand by. Columbia, Houston, we got the data. We'd like a VERP 34, over.
Stand by, one Charlie, for the next flight.
I think we should pass along and reiterate this information while Charlie Duke is talking to Columbia, to Mike Collins. And that is that the exit from the spacecraft, the decision has just been made for the astronauts, for Armstrong and Aldrin, to forego their four-hour rest period, and they will go out onto the surface of the moon 5 hours earlier than originally planned. This will be at 01 hours GMT. That would be 1 hour past midnight GMT. To our listeners all over the world, we might ask that you listen very carefully in case you want to be with us, and we're planning to tune in with us later in the evening. The extravehicular activity, meaning the activity on the surface of the moon, will come at 01 hours GMT.
This is Apollo Control, Houston, at 104 hours 44 minutes. You heard that last exchange, and there is a very strong indication we might have an early EVA with a hatch open, perhaps at 8 o'clock Houston time. One other item of significance that this. The pressure rise in descent propellant line downstage of the tanks has relieved all aspects of the mission, looking very good at this time. At 104 hours, 45 minutes now into the flight of Apollo 11, this is Apollo Control, Houston.
All of the communication which you've just heard in the last few minutes was tape recorded during the brief statement and press conference by Dr. Tom Paine. It was capsulized. In other words, all of the silent or dead air spots were taken out of the recording automatically by electronic equipment. So we heard, some 15 minutes of air-to-ground or moon-to-earth conversation packed into about a 5 to 8 minute period there. And, of course, the most interesting part of the communication was the fact that they that Neil Armstrong has requested, and Mission Control in Houston has said, we support the idea for the extravehicular activity on the surface of the moon to come at 8 p.m. Central Daylight Time in Houston, which is 01 hours GMT. This will be some 5 hours earlier than originally planned, according to the flight planning published to date. We urge our listeners all over the world to make note of this and to stick with us about 2 hours from now.
Fuel problem, a heat exchanger is cleared up. It appears that the ice has melted and we're in good shape now. Al.
This is live communication. This is now being broadcast to you as it happens. This is live moon-to-earth conversations with the Tranquility Base. The lunar module Eagle on the surface of the moon in the Sea of Tranquility. Neil Armstrong had to maneuver the spacecraft slightly beyond the original landing spot and off to the right in order to find a smooth place that wasn't strewn with large rocks and boulders and even craters. Again, we repeat, the extravehicular activity is now being planned some 5 hours earlier than originally scheduled. That would be about an hour and 40 minutes from now. I beg your pardon, 2 hours and 40 minutes from now, when Armstrong will open the hatch and climb out and descend to the surface of the moon. At 01 hours GMT approximately, he requested, command pilot Neil Armstrong requested that the crew be allowed to do this, and the answer back from Mission Control Center was, we support that decision. This does not, of course, mean that we might not have some other decision that might not be reversed in the next 2 hours and 40 minutes. But that seemed to be a pretty clear indication that everything was go for advancing the EVA, the astronauts on the surface of the moon, ahead of that rest period. This indicates, of course, that Armstrong and Aldrin feel good. They don't believe that they want to go to sleep now and try to sleep for 4 hours. They would prefer to go ahead with their activity on the surface of the moon and then to have a long 8-hour rest period after that. Norm Guerin, are you with me there in Washington, you and some of our NASA experts?
Yes, Rhett Turner. Did you have an indication that perhaps the astronauts would select to start their EVA earlier?
The only indication was it had not been discussed in Mission Control, according to Dr. Thomas Paine. This is one of those pilot's discretion decisions. And the first word was that word you heard. There had been considerable speculation about this up to this point. But the pilot, the command pilot, Neil Armstrong, made that decision and then made his request to Earth. This is part of mission rules. The command pilot does have considerable latitude in making such decisions.
Rhett, on that very exciting touchdown, that 12 minutes or so, we heard some phrases like 63, program 64. Now we're going to be talking about EVA activities, and I thought perhaps maybe you could give us an explanation of that.
Well, I think we heard just a bit about that during the power descent, because these were programs in the computer mechanism which were called upon to help guide the spacecraft down to the surface of the moon automatically. Program 63 was here's a call.
Tranquility is going to put the track mode to slow now.
Buzz Aldrin said something there. Tranquility is going to put the something, and I couldn't quite read that. It was just a little bit indistinct to my ear here. Going back to the discussion there, Program 63 guided the spacecraft through the braking phase of the touchdown from power descent down to what is called low or high gate, which is the beginning of the approach to the lunar landing site. At that point, another program was called upon in the computer. Program... Let me check all of my information here. I think program 64 brought it on down to the low gate, and then program 66 for an automatic rate of descent, which would help Neil Armstrong let the computer control his rate of descent while he maneuvered laterally or up or down range to find a smooth spot. And as that touchdown was carried out, we could hear Buzz Aldrin calling out to Neil Armstrong the altitude and position of the spacecraft. Norm?
Well, Red, I wanted to talk about that because we have so many more things coming up here with the EVA, and that has been announced to commence earlier, and there is a preparation time. I have Don Beatty with me. Don, how many hours do they need to prepare for the extravehicular activity?
According to the flight plan, the old flight plan now, which will have to be revised a little bit at the beginning, it will be about a 2-hour period. I wonder if there's been any report that they've started taking pictures out the windows yet. Have we heard that yet, Rhett?
No, I have heard no information or no communication from the moon back to Earth that they've taken any of those pictures up to this point. I presume you're trying to figure out or determine what they have to do first before they get out of the, before they begin those preparations for EVA.
This means that they have to start changing suits for one thing, right, Rhett?
They've got to they were planning to doff helmet and gloves and have a meal at about this point, according to the original flight plan. Now, whether that means they're not going to eat yet, we haven't heard. We know that they would plan to forego the 4-hour rest period. Most of these guys are chow hounds, though, and I would certainly expect them to get a bite to eat about now.
Well, if it still requires the 2 hours, and I believe that's about correct, then they've only got about 30 or 40 minutes left before they must start the preparation for egress.
I see... of course, in the flight plan, the call for camera setups. Now, Buzz Aldrin mounted a bracket for his 16-millimeter color camera yesterday while still in space. Now, I have heard no mention of whether he's got the camera mounted on that bracket out the right-hand window or not. In fact, the only information, the only moon-to-Earth conversation we've had has been concerning some of the systems on board.
Just a moment ago, we heard you mention power down. What is meant by that term at this particular part of the mission, Red?
That means that the spacecraft is beginning to turn off a lot of the electrical systems, particularly that inertial measurement unit, the guidance navigation system, because that is needed during flight. They're on the surface and are sitting still at this moment, and up to that point, before this power down began, they were effecting a simulated countdown for takeoff. This power down is approved after they got a go to stay until what is called T3. Don, would you fill us in briefly? When is T3? I've been trying to locate that in the flight plan here. Is that several revs ahead?
I would think it is. I haven't been able to locate it on my flight plan either.
We had some early notations of stay or no stay conditions. T1 came within the first couple of minutes. T2 came a few minutes after that, just a very short duration after touchdown. And now there has been a go for what was designated as T3, and I'm trying to track that down. I had no indication of what these time bases would be up to this point, so I assume they're here in the flight plan someplace.
Well, Rhett, there's something else that should be mentioned about this time. The descent section took them down to the surface of the moon at about 20 hours 18 GMT, and in just a couple of hours it had become the focal point for that EVA activity, inasmuch as it houses a lot of valuable equipment. Perhaps you could mention some of those at this moment.
The equipment which will be unstowed and taken onto the surface?
Yes.
The first thing which will pop out when Neil Armstrong opens the hatch and climbs out onto what is called the front porch, he will pull a lanyard. There's what is called a D-ring. It's really just a great handhold that has a cable attached to it. He pulls this, and it causes a mechanism called the Modular Equipment Stowage Assembly, MESA, or MESA. It causes it to flop out and open. Mounted on the MESA is the television camera, which will be aimed right at Neil Armstrong on the leg, on the ladder of the lunar module. And Buzz Aldrin, inside the spacecraft, will actuate the TV camera switch, and hopefully, if the transmission works properly, we here on Earth will watch Neil as he climbs down onto the footpad and off onto the surface of the moon. Inside the MESA also, covered with Mylar foil for heat protection, are several of the containers and scoops and mechanisms needed for the early experiments on the surface. The rock boxes, or the sample return containers, as they're called, are stowed, two rock boxes, each to hold some 50 to 60 pounds of lunar material, if possible. We may get back up to 100 pounds of lunar material, depending upon how much the astronauts can scoop aboard after the early parts of, in what is called a bulk sample. The rock boxes are there. There is a scoop for picking this material up from the surface. Remember, the astronauts in their stiff spacesuits can't lean all the way over to the surface, so they need handles and different types of mechanisms to reach down and dig it up for them. One of the major experiments, which is a solar wind experiment, is stowed there. It's rolled up like a window shade, and it's a type of foil which will be opened up on a tripod and stuck into the lunar surface and opened facing the sun. Now, during the entire two-hour and 40-minute period that the astronauts are on the surface, this
window shade or this aluminum foil surface will pick up particles coming from the sun. You see, there's no atmosphere, nothing to impede their transmission from the sun. Then this foil mechanism will be, foil will be stowed again and brought back on board the lunar module and on the command module. The other two major experiments are in another container on the back of the LM called the ESAP package. This is the passive seismic detector and the laser reflector mechanisms about which we'll be describing much in the hours to come. Back to you in Washington, Norm.
Thank you very much, Rhett. Eagle has been on the lunar surface now for 2 hours and 14 minutes. You're listening to the Voice of America's continuous coverage of the flight of Apollo 11. This program is originating in Washington. We'll return to our live Voice of America coverage of the mission of Apollo 11 following this report of late world news. Commander Neil Armstrong has reported from the moon that through his overhead window, he was looking at the Earth, and it was, in his words, big and bright and beautiful. Astronauts Armstrong and Aldrin have been on the moon for over 2 hours now. They made their touchdown just 6 kilometers off the predetermined target, but well within the range of their planned landing site. They are now surveying the moon's landscape from their lunar lander. They report the color is almost uniformly gray with thousands of craters in view. Dr. Thomas Paine, head of the U.S. Space Agency, reported to President Nixon on the lunar landing. The president relayed his congratulations for this feat in space. General Earl Wheeler, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, says the current lull in the Vietnam fighting is cyclic. He told newsmen in Saigon that there have been periods of limited fighting in the past, only to be followed by new communist offensives. After a 4-day tour of the battle zone, General Wheeler said that South Vietnam's army is rapidly increasing its combat capability, but he declined to comment on prospects for future United States troop withdrawals. In another area of combat, Israel reports that Sunday's heavy ground fighting in the Suez Canal area tapered off late Sunday. There's no word yet from the Egyptian side. In the air, Egypt says it downed 17 Israeli jets. Israel admitted losing 2 planes and said 5 Egyptian planes were downed. And Pope Paul Sunday praised man's conquest of space in what he called this prophetic day for the dominion of the universe. He called for prayers that space progress be dedicated to the good of all. That's the news from the Voice of America newsroom. This is Jack Moyles reporting. This is the Voice of America's continuous coverage of the flight of Apollo 11. Our astronauts Armstrong and Aldrin have been in their lunar lander on the moon now for 2 hours and 16 minutes, surveying a landscape of rills and hills, boulders, craters, and rocks. And joining me here at the Apollo News Center, Al Johnson.
Oh, thank you, Norm. I would imagine that most of the people here, as I'm sure everyone at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston and most Americans everywhere, are suffering the aftermath of a certain amount of nervous exhaustion after having watched that remarkable flight of the lunar lander as it made its landing on the surface of the moon, carrying the 2 American astronauts, the first human beings to land on the moon, a landing which took place at 20 hours, 18 minutes, and 42 seconds, GMT. But of course, right now, Norm, I think that the big news is not so much that they have landed, that is a fait accompli, but the...